You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, June 11th, 2025. It's another beautiful morning to have you here up north. Live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the app, social media, podcast, however you do it, thanks for starting your day right here. I've got a question for you. What do you like on your pancakes? And I know that, you know, yesterday we talked about having, you know, maple syrup in your coffee. Parker Olson's here in Madison as well. Who is it that had maple syrup in their coffee yesterday? There's our pop quiz from yesterday.
Was it Dan Hagen?
Yes, it was. It was Dan Hagen's dad, yeah, who put maple syrup in his coffee. Or maybe he did.
I thought it was him. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Anyway, so the question is, what do you like on your pancakes? Well, take maple syrup off. That's like the default answer. I'm thinking more like this morning, I made them with blueberries for Sherry, strawberries for me. I also like chocolate chips when I'm doing chocolate chip waffles. I call them, when I do the chocolate chips in my waffles, they're called Chippa waffles. See what I did? Anyway, chocolate chips and pancakes as well. Thank you. Delayed. I'll take it. That's fine.
That's working.
Then there's people, I know people that put peanut butter on their pancakes. So what about you? Are you just straight up maple syrup or what?
Usually just maple syrup. Chocolate chips, definitely number one. Peanut butter, I don't know if I've had that before, but I know I would like it. Like, that just sounds great.
Yes. Let's see. Tony says maple syrup, raspberries, and also Alicia's dad and Dan.
There you go.
So there you go. Anyway, not that he's saying put Alicia's dad and Dan on your pancakes. It's two.
That'd be a weird pancake.
Yeah, it would. So anyway, having had a wonderful hot breakfast of fruity pancakes, we're ready to get on with our day here. How does Parker Olson start his day? Way before the crack of dawn. Because I know you drink water.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are you going to tell me next? That you have a granola bar or something for breakfast or anything at all?
I wish it was that good. I don't eat anything for breakfast usually.
Nothing for breakfast.
It's pretty rare.
What do you do after the show? Do you go get like a late breakfast?
No, I usually around, I don't know, maybe 10:30, 11 o'clock, I'll have lunch.
Okay.
That's about where I'm at now. Yeah.
All right. Well, now that I know you're still relatively new there at the top of State Street in Madison, but do you have a favorite lunch place yet?
Oh, I've only gone out for lunch, actually, I think once. I usually just pack like a turkey and cheese sandwich and call it good.
A turkey and cheese sandwich.
Oh, yeah. I'm a simple man, Pat. I'm a very simple
bottle of water and a turkey and cheese sandwich.
Yep.
And yes, kids, his skin is as white as it sounds by that menu of turkey and cheese and coffee.
Yes, I am.
Borderline translucent over here, but we'll work on it. We'll work on it. Coming up on the program today, if you're hearing a sputtering sound, it's coming from Republicans who are stammering about how their big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill doesn't actually cut Medicaid benefits to deserving Americans when it actually does. Bigly. In fact, we need to correct our record from yesterday on just how much will be cut from the stable, affordable health care coverage that millions of working families rely on for security. Yesterday, while talking about it, I didn't grab the right word. And I talked about Republicans wanting to cut $600 million from Medicaid. It wasn't that. It was $600 billion over the next 10 years is going to be cut. By the way, saw a great video clip from Congressman Tom Tiffany here up north that he put out on YouTube in the past day or two. A fact check on all the things about Medicaid cuts. I'm going to be fact checking the fact check in the next couple of days here. You're going to want to stick around for that. We're going to talk to a Madison area chef later this hour about why so many small business owners want the legislature to knock off its attempt to kill a working program that makes childcare more affordable. and ask again, what is it that Republicans have against affordable child care in this state? We will again this hour torture our poor Wisconsin Rapids friend, Melissa Kay, about her quest for a new pigeon, complete with new jingle and everything. In our second hour, it is always harder to defend yourself when you can't see your attacker. And that is certainly the case for public schools and a lack of transparency about the voucher program. Because without that transparency, taxpayers aren't able to see how much of their money is being siphoned away to vouchers for well-off families to send their kids to private schools. So we will talk about that issue, the state budget debate, and other end-of-the-school-year issues with Brent Bergstrom, president of the Green Bay Education Association, and Jeremy Traynor, president of the Eau Claire Association of Educators. And in our climate check segment in our third hour, Melissa Baldoff talks about Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy's war on pollution controls for automobiles. Again, I feel compelled to read that again. Sean Duffy's war on pollution controls for automobiles. She also has some opinions on that new Dan Schaefer column. Remember how much we were teasing it yesterday? Yeah, it came out yesterday afternoon, and it has generated as much conversation as I thought that it would, where Dan Schaefer in his column calls on Governor Tony Evers not to run for a third term. Lays out all the reasons why he thinks that Governor Evers has been an amazing governor, good for the state, but shouldn't run for a third term. Melissa Baldoff, a former advisor to Governor Tony Evers, has some thoughts on the column. We'll also check in with Civic Media's Earl Ingram, Todd Alba, James Kelly, so much more along the way as well, plus our Scotty Summer Text to Win contest. But you can send us a text right now, 855-75-CIVIC. Use that Civic Media app to text us that way, or put something in the comment sections on Facebook or YouTube. That would be the Up North News Facebook page or the Up North News YouTube page, or the Civic Media Facebook page and the Civic Media YouTube page. So Tony says, what are your thoughts on that column, Pat? Look at Tony stirring the pot nice and early this on this wonderful day. And look at Parker laughing at Tony about that. Look at that. He's a pot stirrer. It's what he does. It's what he does best. Yeah. So much like the race for Democratic chair this weekend coming up in Wisconsin Dells, I'm going to play the role that I've always played as a TV anchor, as a humble facilitator of discussion, and let people, you know, comment on both sides of it. I haven't, you know, taken sides in the DPW chairs race. Those are three very good quality candidates. I have excellent things to say about all of them. And there's definitely points to be made on both sides of the question of whether Governor Evers should run again. I will say, let me put this out for fodder here, because I'm in the minority on what Joe Biden should have done last year, and I'm sticking to it. I understand that most people disagree with me, but just so you know where I'm coming from on this, I don't think Joe Biden should have stepped down from the ticket. And I hear all kinds of people right now saying, great, well, you know, the Republicans would have like 60 senators right now and all that. I'm not necessarily sure about that. I think Joe Biden and his team screwed up how to move forward. I think Joe Biden should have basically embraced his age and run with it and said, yeah, I'm an old man. I cannot run a 40-yard dash right now. There's a lot of things I can't do. But look at this team I've surrounded myself with, and look at the legislation that I've passed. I'm the manager of this team. Vote for this team. Or here's what Donald Trump would put together. I think if he'd have gone with a team strategy that would have looked more at that cast of characters that Donald Trump has put together, that Joe Biden probably could have done better than a lot of people are giving him credit for. That said, I don't begrudge his decision to leave. I just think, again, that was handled poorly. If he was ever going to not run, and he should not have run, but he should have made that decision a lot earlier, like Labor Day of 2023, so that you could have an actual Democratic primary. But when you get to this point in the calendar, I mean, you're in and you find the right strategy to go forward. But he made the decision he made. Kamala Harris, much like Hillary Clinton, both women far more capable, far more responsible, far more qualified to be president, frankly, far more qualified to be American citizens than Donald J. Trump ever could hope to be. But You don't take it on who's most qualified. You take it on who runs the best campaign, who runs the most negative ads versus positive ads, and who can fool enough people enough of the times to get the votes. And Donald Trump's been able to do that when he's run against these two different women, not against Joe Biden, which, again, says a lot about our political system today and how we have to do our messaging and how we have to stop letting the bullies win. And how do you counter that? So all of that comes into play when you look ahead at questions like, you know, Governor Tony Evers and whether he runs on his record and says, again, look at what I stand for. Look at the team I've put together. Again, I'm not here to run a 100-yard dash for you. Or if he says, hey, I've accomplished a lot. I think it's time for other folks to give it a go. Democrats had a very shallow bench in the last decade after all kinds of folks, present company included, were bounced from office. The bench was real thin. It has built up really nicely right now. So if the governor decides not to run for a third term, there are plenty of people who will be ready to step into the fray and again make the case of who actually is backing Wisconsin families, who's actually backing Wisconsin businesses, who actually wants affordable health care in the state, who actually wants to have broadband extended all across the state, who actually wants middle-class taxes to be affordable, and who doesn't? Who's been an impediment to all of those things? I think Governor Evers or any Democratic candidate can make that case next year. But first, we have to take care of the parlor game, which is, will he or won't he? And so Governor Evers says once the budget is done, that's when he's going to make a decision and announce it. And so we will have to wait until then. But it's not going to stop people from talking about it at the convention this weekend in Wisconsin Dells. And Dan Schaefer's column, as I predicted, was just the chum to throw in the water, if you will, to get everybody swarming and talking. I think nobody really wanted to get into it one way or the other, depending on how you feel about it. And Dan has essentially given everybody permission to go ahead, share your feelings, because you know what? When it's all said and done, let's say it's half the people. Half the people, you know, on one side of that question or not, are going to turn out to be having chosen the wrong side. And they're going to have to, you know, make that decision to say, okay, that didn't go how I wanted it to go, but, you know, all hands on deck, full speed ahead. Because if not, you end up with whoever wins the Republican nomination for governor next year. You end up with Robin Voss being the most powerful person in Wisconsin. Right now, he's the most powerful Republican in Wisconsin. He's got far more power than, you know, Ron Johnson or anybody else. But he's got a governor that serves as a check and balance on him. Do you want Robin Voss to be the most powerful man in Wisconsin? That is truly what's on the ballot next year, if you think about it. In sports at 6:19, Jackson Churio and Jake Bowers hit home runs, and pitcher Quinn Priester struck out 7 in 6 strong innings as the Milwaukee Brewers beat the Atlanta Braves 4-1 on Tuesday night. And Trevor McGill, here's a nice surprise. He pitched the 9th and got his 13th save in 15 tries. They will do this one more time this afternoon at 12:35. Is when the pregame will start across several Civic Media stations. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn much more. We'll check Brittany Merlot's state forecast in just a bit as well. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Mornings, powered by Up North News, or as Tony puts it on YouTube, powered by Up North News and an assortment of caffeine. True. Guilty. Well, except for Parker. It's also, you know, powered by water.
Just nothing water. But water, baby.
Nothing but water. Not even one of those little flavor packets, Crystal Light or anything like that?
No, nothing? And I'll tell you what, Pat. The water that we have here in the Madison office is not good. It's bad water. It's so bad.
It's city water. I know. I mean,
it's the like the water coolers ones that they bring in. Yeah. Like, it's
well,
not,
some of those, you know, I mean, probably, and I'm not saying that's the case where you are down there, but some, you know, drinking fountain, who thinks to change the, some of those filters have been changed since the Ford administration, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's healthy. I'm sure it'll do you no harm whatsoever. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was on Up Front, the WISN TV program that is shown statewide on Sunday mornings. And once again, after the usual lines about, you know, whether he and Governor Evers can reach an agreement on the budget, he was asked about the big bloated boondoggle of Donald Trump's budget bill and its massive cuts, and asked if he was concerned about the cuts to Medicaid and SNAP food share benefits. And Voss's words, I'd rather just read them. I don't care to play the audio the way that he says it so dismissively. He says, "I'm not at all worried. I think there is so much hyperbole and exaggeration from my friends on the left. There are not cuts for anybody who's watching. There are not cuts in Medicaid. When they tell you there are cuts, it is untrue." And that's a line they continue to stick with, you know, including Donald Trump, who promised in February during a Fox News interview, he said, quote, "Medicare, Medicaid, none of that stuff is going to be touched." One day later, he endorsed the House Republican budget plan that cuts hundreds of billions of dollars in Medicaid, more than $600 billion. And of course, they don't want to stop there. You know, Ron Johnson has said as much. So have others. Kevin Cramer, the senator from North Dakota, said in one interview, "How much waste, fraud, abuse is there in Medicare? Why don't we go after that? I think we should." Senate Republican leader John Thune said, "I think anything that is waste, fraud, and abuse are obviously open to discussions," which gets us to one of the main points of this program about getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. You, dear listener, you are the waste that they want to cut because you are not a billionaire. And so the money that you pay in taxes that might come back to you through Medicaid or through better schools or clean air, they want that money going elsewhere to the very wealthy as a tax cut, not coming back to you as some kind of tax rebate, but actually leaving you and going to people much wealthier than you. So who all is in this waste, fraud, and abuse category? Well, Wisconsin Medicaid Director Bill Hanna was also on Up Front on WISN. And here's one example that he gives that I think a lot of folks can relate to. Let's give a listen.
I think we can look at and think about who is going to be impacted by what's in the House bill. Let me give you one real clear example that somebody would not be excluded. We know that individuals 55 to 64 are the least likely to be working and on Medicaid, but that doesn't mean they're not contributing. You think about somebody who is caring for their grandchildren so that their adult child could work. We know childcare is a challenge in this state. That individual would no longer be eligible for Medicaid. They would have to stop caring for their grandchild and go find a job so that they can maintain their Medicaid. I think that detail is really important in this conversation instead of broad sweeping generalizations that nobody will get hurt.
Exactly, 100%. Bill Hanna, the state's Medicaid director, warning against broad sweeping generalizations. Because again, when you do that, and you have, as a state report said yesterday, roughly 63,000 Medicaid recipients in Wisconsin would fall under these new, harsher requirements for work or for reporting. Basically, it's all red tape. It's more hoops to jump through under the guise of waste, fraud, and abuse. But that's 63,000 people in Wisconsin in varying degrees of health or caregiver status or disability or whatever the case, that would either have to go out and find employment or would have to stop providing the care that they're providing or fill out even more paperwork online or by paper so often that they finally give up and they lose their benefits without Republicans actually saying that they're cutting the benefits. What Robin Voss and the others are saying to those 63,000 people on Medicaid in Wisconsin is you are all a bunch of lazy couch surfers. and that you should get off your butt, put down the box of bonbons, turn off the soap opera, and go out and get a job, you lazy hippie. That is the message from Robin Voss. And he can say, oh, this is hyperbole, and this is lie. He can say something's a lie all day long, except that he hasn't told you the truth about something. He hasn't shown you if you can actually cut Medicaid $600 million based on waste, fraud, and abuse. I would like to see that. Again, just show that to us. Don't give us one or two examples, because in any example of anything, you'll find somebody who is, you know, wasting or squandering the benefits that are out there. That is not an example. Give us the example that amounts to, again, you know, that much money being cut. Because if you can't, then you're kind of giving away the game here and letting us know that you can't actually show waste, fraud, and abuse. But if I show you somebody who looks lazy, if I show you somebody who looks scary, and I tell you just to multiply that by tens of millions, maybe you'll be fooled into thinking that we're actually cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. They're not. They're cutting you. You are the waste that they need to cut to help their friends. Still ahead, we'll be talking to Dan Schaefer, political editor from Civic Media, about the upcoming state Democratic convention. We will visit with Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau, and we'll give you another chance at hearing our keyword this hour in the Civic Media Scotty Summer Text to Win contest. All ahead this morning, powered by Up North News, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Your reminder that before the hour is up, use that Civic Media app and text us the keyword beer, B-E-E-R. That's this hour's keyword for a pair of brewer's tickets. And you'll also be in the running for those grand prizes, a weekend getaway in Door County or in Wisconsin Dells. Again, use the Civic Media app. Go to any one of the radio stations on there. Use the text feature and text us the keyword beer before the end of this hour. And by the way, while you're on the app, use that voice note feature as well. Remember, I mentioned our phone system is undergoing a little remodeling job right now, shall we say? So in the meantime, you can text us, but you can also leave us a voice note, and maybe we'll put that on the air as well with your take on, you know, the new Culver's chicken sandwiches, for example, or anything that you heard so far in all the various news stories that we covered, or what we're about to cover as we head into our homeroom segment for this week, where we talk about public education, all of the opportunities, all of the great things about education in Wisconsin, and of course, all the threats to it as well. And so joining us today, we've got Brent Bergstrom. He's president of the Green Bay Education Association, and Jeremy Traynor, president of the Eau Claire Association of Educators. Both are WEAC affiliates. Brent and Jeremy, good morning. Thank you for being here today.
Morning.
Good morning.
It's so great to have you both here. Jeremy, do I understand right, you're fairly new in the leadership role in Eau Claire?
Yeah, well, I started my presidency, I guess, about 10 days. So I'm a seasoned veteran. No, not
yes.
Really. I'm a science teacher here in Eau Claire, and I've been teaching that. I just finished my 26th year, which is why my hair is a little, you know, less than normal. But and I've been on the exec team for our union for quite a while. I was also on the WEAC board of directors. So I have a little experience going into this, but in terms of being the president and the leader of our union, fairly new. So,
okay. And Brent, tell us a little of your background as an educator and being active in the union.
Yeah, I'm a music teacher in the Green Bay Area Public Schools, and I have been serving for the Green Bay Education Association as the president for about 3 years. I have experience teaching in Eau Claire, Peshtigo, and Green Bay. So I've been all over the place in different sized districts across the state.
Okay. So we're getting into the end of the school year, but we're also still in the thick of the state budget debate at the state capitol. So we'll have some ground to cover in both of those areas. But Brent, I wanted to start with you because we've spoken on the program a couple of times here about Green Bay's decision at the city level to put the impact of school vouchers on the actual property tax bills, and that some folks want to make sure that you and your union teammates get credit for that, because this is all about transparency is the way I want to put it. You know, it's very tough to take on a threat if the threat's invisible. And it sure seems like a lot of the ways that our tax dollars have been going to the voucher system have not been transparent. And so you and your team have played a role in improving that, haven't you?
Yeah, I wish we could take all the credit. We were really a very, very small part of the work that was done. And we've been talking about it for years. And finally, the city council did pass a vote to show that up on our tax bills. So we're really happy about it, because the public deserves to know how much money is being funneled into private voucher schools.
And that was, I would imagine, not it was, is still a surprise to folks when people are told by you or others, you know, again, I think so many people think the voucher program is still this little experimental thing. And for just say the taxpayers in Green Bay, it most certainly is not, right?
Correct. Yeah. We lose about $13 million in the Greenberry Public Schools to private voucher schools. So that's a big, big, big ticket item there. So the big part that usually surprises people is when we say that voucher schools are reimbursed for special education at 90%, where public schools are only reimbursed at 30%. It's clearly not equal.
No, and that actually, that was a story statewide, and I don't know if it was the Associated Press or Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but somebody put out the story, and then a lot of other outlets picked it up. The kind of thing we have been saying for months, if it almost feels like years here, is that disparity in just that area, the special education reimbursement rate. Jeremy, do you feel the same challenges there in terms of bringing transparency to the taxpayers so that they understand, and they can't just say, oh, it's those teachers' unions that are responsible for our property tax bills? It's a real messaging challenge for you guys, right?
Well, 100%. And it's, you know, it's a challenge everywhere. I think we're starting to get some momentum. Just the fact that districts are forced to go to a referendum, you know, every 2 years. And then there's a lot of education that, you know, is involved in those referendums just to get them to pass. But the reality is we're asking our taxpayers to fund two school systems, and the system's broken. It doesn't work. There's no evidence that voucher schools are doing any better than public schools. It's the opposite, actually. And I think that the public needs to understand how much money they're actually spending on those voucher programs. So like in Eau Claire, where we just passed a referendum in November, and it was really a status quo referendum just to keep the doors open. And we're going to be going back to referendum, it looks like, again, soon. We're already facing a deficit. And you know, this voucher program is killing us. So,
and even if you take away the voucher part of the equation, if you're just looking at why there are so many referendums, and again, I feel like the message is only starting to get out that we're talking about 16 consecutive years of underfunding schools compared to the rate of inflation. So, Jeremy, when you say it's about keeping the doors open, it's literally that. Referendums are not nearly as much for, you know, new buildings, new gyms, new remodels, new whatever. It's to keep the lights on the way things are right now.
Absolutely. I mean, especially, you know, smaller school districts are literally going bankrupt, and it's scary. Luckily in Eau Claire, we have a very supportive community that has been very supportive of our past referendum votes. So we've been able to at least keep the status quo, and we've been able to do some remodeling, but that's not going to last forever. Some of our old referenda dollars are going to be expiring, and we're going to be asking our public for even more. You know, the funding formula at the state level has to change, and our politicians, you know, need to get on the same page and fund our public schools. We're going to have some serious issues.
That would be a lot easier if only we had a budget surplus, Brent. Oh, wait, we do. It's $4 billion that's sitting there. Brent, this is not an unsolvable problem in Madison.
No, it's not. I mentioned that reimbursement rate before. The budget only calls for 60% for public schools. Again, big gap there between public schools and private schools. And we've been told time and time again that the Republicans will not come past even 35%. They might up it, but only to 35%. So the discrepancy there between the 90 and the 60 or the 30, it's huge, and it's not acceptable.
And then we get to the next step, which is the enrollment caps, because right now there is a limit to how much the state will pay for and allow for vouchers for kids to, you know, move from public schools into private schools. And yet those caps are set to be lifted. We have spoken to Eau Claire State Representative Christian Phelps about his bill that would keep the voucher caps on there. Jeremy, Representative Phelps is in your backyard there. How important is it for those enrollment caps to stay, and what happens if they actually are lifted?
I mean, it's vitally important that they stay. I mean, if they're lifted, we're already experiencing a declining enrollment. A lot of districts are, partially because of the voucher program. So when these kids leave the public school sector and go to the voucher schools, that reduces our enrollment at the public school, which also, reduces the amount of funding that we get at the state. So it's a huge snowball effect. Not only are we losing money due to the voucher programs, but we're also losing students.
How is it in the Green Bay area, Brent, in terms of the public perceptions that some politicians, are feeding into, like, well, this kind of competition is good. It doesn't, first off, should there be this kind of competition? Second, should it be there with public money? And third, does somebody have their thumb on the scales of this competition? But is that still the way it's kind of framed in conversations there, especially involving some politicians?
I would say yes. It always has been that way. It's been that way since Act 10 with Scott Walker and trying to turn the public against public schools and turn it against teachers. When it comes down to it, though, you know, our union and our district is there for the students, number one, and we know that the funding is not set up for the success of our students. It's set up to hurt public schools. It's set up to cause a bigger divide between the wealthy and the middle class. And we really just need to focus on getting our money back into our public schools and supporting our kids and our communities.
All right, let's step away from the politics here before we wrap up. Brent, we're heading into the summer break here. I mean, do you have any observations on how the year went as an educator, as a local labor leader, and, you know, how you expect things to go next year?
You know, this is one of the, I think I speak for most of our educators when I say this was one of the hardest years we've faced. Between the political climate, things that are carrying over into the classrooms from the political climate across the country, and just educators constantly being piled on with all of the work to try to move our students forward and being blamed when that doesn't happen is a lot for our staff to handle.
Would you share in that assessment, Jeremy, as you look back at this year and what the education environment is like?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt our staff works incredibly hard. Our teachers are dedicated to our students, all students, no matter, you know, what their zip code is, we're there for them. And, there's just been a ton of initiatives added to us, added to our plates. I think we forget that COVID wasn't really that long ago, and we're still feeling the effects of that across the state. There's achievement gaps. A lot of social emotional learning has been happening, you know, inside our classroom as well. That's been adding to us. Students are just different, and technology is different. AI is different. And so there's been a lot of things added to teachers' plates that were never there before. And so we're working really, really hard. I'm proud of our teachers. I'm proud of our students. We're making improvements, but we certainly need some support from our state level. We need some funding. We need equitable funding practices. I have nothing against private schools, but I just don't feel like, you know, we should be asked to pay for them as well. You know, I think we need to put our funding back into our public schools and take some relief off of our teachers.
Yeah. And it, the work is getting done because of you and your colleagues. And then, you know, on top of the work, it all that work from every educator needs some leadership as well. And thank you both for stepping up and doing that. Jeremy Traynor, president of the Eau Claire Area Educators, and Brent Bergstrom, Green Bay Education Association. Gentlemen, thank you both for everything that you do and for taking a little time with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it so much. Still ahead today, we'll be talking to Civic Media's Earl Ingram about some of the stories that he's following in Southeast Wisconsin. And we'll be talking to Melissa Baldoff, who normally has our climate check segment. And we will, of course, still get into some climate check matters. But as a former staffer for Governor Tony Evers, she's got a few things to say as well about pressure that seems to be coming for Governor Evers to not run for a third term ahead of this weekend's state Democratic convention. That's all in the next hour of these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Tomorrow on the program, we will have State Senate Democratic Leader Diane Hesselbein. We'll be joined by Sean O'Malley to talk about your money and the markets. We'll talk to Chad Holmes, Sharita Booker, all that and much more ahead tomorrow on these mornings powered by Up North News. Ollie in the Northwoods, I see you up there, and unfortunately our phone system is not quite ready yet to take phone calls once again. So Ollie, we can see the call coming in, but we can't actually route it, you know, up to on the air, which is why I keep talking about texting all the time. So send us a text, and trust me, when the phone lines are ready to go again, we're going to be pasting that phone number everywhere for people to come in, so I don't have to just listen to myself yapping all the time. And according to the text line, one Luke Mather says that once again, instead of saying Governor Tony Evers, I referred to Governor Earl, Tony Earl, no, Tony Evers. But it's always nice to be reminded just how old I am and how many governors I've seen already. Late yesterday, I talked to Chef Evan Donnells from Cadre Restaurant in Madison and Lola's High-Low Lounge. He's been one of the folks with Main Street Alliance who's been especially vocal about ways that politicians could be more helpful to small business, more helpful in leveling the playing field. The classic example that I would give is there's a small business owner that wants to help his employees and provide, say, paid time off. But if his competition across the street doesn't do that, he's at a disadvantage. I mean, he might attract, you know, the better workers, but he's also going to run out of money first, or she, as the case may be. Whereas if you just increased the minimum wage for everybody, or if you had paid family leave for everybody, well, that would be good for all small businesses. A rising tide lifts all boats. That's the kind of arguments that Main Street Alliance makes, and Chef Evan Donnells makes those as well. As a restaurant owner and as somebody who has looked at the issue of childcare, and we know what a crisis we have right now for affordable childcare in this country. And we also know that there's something that would work. There's a tax credit that's there's a tax credit that Republicans have put out there that hasn't worked. And there's something Governor Evers has tried that has worked. It's better to go with the easier, less complex solution, as you'll hear in my conversation here with Chef Evan Donnells.
First of all, you've got to back up and get to the root of the issue itself, which is childcare issue. Like, childcare is not a business issue alone. It's a people issue. It's a society issue. People need childcare at almost all walks of life at some point in time in their lives. A lot of people need it in order to have a dual income household, because we all know the single income household essentially doesn't exist at this point, unless you are making a lot of money. So the problem that I have with it is the childcare industry was absolutely gutted by COVID. It was already heading towards broken in a lot of ways in terms of their ability to compensate their employees. But all of a sudden when COVID happened, nobody wanted to take their kids to childcare because everybody was worried about a virus. So people left the industry in mass. And so the federal government and the state government both subsidized sort of their reopening and getting back into the flow of things, which helped bring some people back to the industry. They never reached 100% staffing levels after that. But those subsidies are a necessity in order for them to provide affordable childcare that everyone can have access to, not just people of means. And so we run into this problem where we start to have a debate about what the role of government is in these sorts of businesses. And in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of people, the role of government is to essentially set the stage so that people can have a competitive marketplace inside of any given industry, period. And what we have right now is, if there was profit to be had in this, some big business would step in, but they're not. Almost all childcare facilities are small businesses run by people who care genuinely about caring for children. And they're telling you that they can't even pay their employees the lowest wage I've heard of on average of just about any industry inside of the state of Wisconsin, and they need help for it. The Republican answer to that is, oh, well, we'll have the employers give a tax credit to make it more affordable for people to be able to afford their childcare. But the problem with that is twofold. One, you can't have a single thing like that paintbrush across the entire industry. It's not going to work for lots of people. We all know that. The second thing is as employers, we don't want to deal with that. We're happy to pay people and do other business, but that's just extra complications for our world where we're busy trying to do our business as well. And so from an employer perspective, it's like, we don't want to deal with having to try to navigate with our employees how to utilize the tax credit that we're not even positive will work for them. Because again, if it did work before, people would have used it. And so we run into this problem, and there are other states that have done this. Like New Mexico subsidized childcare all the way across the state. And right away, like employment levels went way up as people who were forced to be single income households could become dual income households again.
You did talk to Eric Gunn of the Wisconsin Examiner, and I heartily recommend that to everybody. And you also gave a response as to why a tax credit like this wouldn't work. It can't be evenly applied because, I mean, you gave the illustration just of your full-time employees and whether that tax credit would work and certainly not work equitably.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't think that it will necessarily. I mean, it's the same general philosophy as running into whether people can write off or they should just take the standard deduction. A lot of the people in a lot of industries aren't really seeing tax returns, and they're living very hand to mouth. And so having the promise of some subsidy at the end of the year doesn't help them get childcare in the moment. And I hate to have this be a partisan issue, but it certainly has become one.
Well, I'm still not sure how it became a partisan issue, because let's backtrack to the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act, before it was derided as Obamacare by Republicans, the idea for the Affordable Care Act actually came from conservatives that said, how about if you make it easier for people to afford private insurance? And so now you have that, and that's the model that has been working, fewer uninsured people all the time. So it seems to make sense you would do the same thing with childcare, make childcare affordable again, and rather than trying these complicated tax credits and everything else. I feel like we know the answer here, and some folks in politics, for whatever reason, just don't want to acknowledge it.
Yeah, well, and it becomes the same problem of the sort of juxtaposition of, if people can't afford childcare, they eventually go broke, and then they need to be on state voucher care, and then they become a burden of the state. But we have to look at childcare the same way. If people's income levels drop below, then all of a sudden they're on voucher care because they're not paying for their own insurance anymore. They're on food stamps because they have to be, because they had to try to pay for childcare. Like, all these additional costs put people in a system where they end up costing a lot more money than if they were out contributing and generating more tax revenue in the first place. And this isn't complicated math, but you would really hope at the end of the day, the one thing that wouldn't be partisan would be you know, feeding and providing shelter for children during the course of a day. But as we saw with trying to get free unlimited meals to kids in schools, we do this interesting job where we're requiring children to be in a facility from ages 5 to 18, but we don't do anything. And that's paid for by taxpayer money. That's called school. But we don't provide school for 0 through 4. And it doesn't make any sense. There, so many mothers are on Badger Care. Their child is on Badger Care right after they give birth for the first year of their life. Then they've got to go figure out some way to upend their lives to take care of their children for the next 4 years before they're mandated to be in school by the state again. So we should just take care of that all the way through. And as an employer, I don't mind paying additional taxes to know that it's taking care of children. I don't want to navigate an unproven, untested theory about how a tax credit's going to somehow make it affordable for my employees, because I'll have to deal with the consequences of it if it doesn't work.
We're talking to Chef Evan Donnells from Cadre Restaurant in Madison about child care and tax credits versus direct support through the Child Care Counts program. And again, much like the Affordable Care Act or health care overall, I keep coming back to this one notion that we always heard from small businesses back then as well. We don't want to be in the healthcare business. And I heard you say earlier, you don't really want to be in the child care business. So instead of tax credits, help the people who are most in need so that you can get back to focusing on widgets, or in your case, running a restaurant, mm-hmm. rather than seeing if your employees can jump all the right hoops for people to get a tax credit.
Well, and even better, do that through the child care facilities themselves. Why are you making the employer have to deal with this when the one thing that all these people have in common is they're wanting access to childcare? Channel that money through the childcare facilities. They're already heavily regulated. They're already monitored. There's a lot less of a chance that it's going to be abused. It's going to go to the right people, and it's going to give people more childcare.
Chef Evan Donnells, thank you so much for joining us and talking from a small business standpoint about the impact of this very important issue. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks again for having me, Pat.
It was really nice to get a chance to talk to him, taking time for, I'm sure you heard all the restaurant work going on in the background there at Cadre Restaurant in Madison. He also has Lola's Hilo Lounge. And as I was talking to him, I was looking at the Instagram page for Lola's in Madison as well. And this is where Parker comes into the equation, because in the Lola's Instagram feed, at a Mallards game, in the back scoreboard there, it says, free spicy popcorn at Lola's with your Mallards tickets.
Yeah.
I asked him about that. He said, we can't even keep that. That spicy popcorn has become so popular.
That's a really good deal. The Mallards have definitely got something going there. They do, I think, Culver's free custard if the Mallards score like 5 runs in an inning, too.
Oh, yeah. I love all those things, you know, whether it's the Eau Claire Express up here or wherever. And again, you get small business involved, or, you know, small mid-sized businesses, and, you know, reward people for getting off their duff, get out of the couch, get out of the house and go to a game like this. Everything has to be Brewers, Packers, Badgers. Go to some of these smaller teams and take in a game there.
Yeah.
How often do you work all the Mallards games?
I work usually Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because, you know, Mallards games are usually at night, and okay. I get up at 4 o'clock for the show, so, yeah.
Okay, I understand. Okay, it's an adjustment, trust me, the early alarms here. Reminder that coming up later this evening on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba will be our own Christina Laurie, who puts together the newsletter for Up North News. So she'll be joining Pete during the 7 o'clock hour, and you can always subscribe to her newsletter and mine at upnorthnewswi.com. Also ahead, we're still going to have our Scani Summer Text to Win contest. Again, we do a different keyword four times a day, and then you use your app to text that into us. And if, you know, we draw yours that hour, you get that hour's prize, which might be $100. It might be Brewers tickets. And then you're in the running for one of the grand prizes, a weekend stay in Door County or in the Wisconsin Dells area, and some gas money to get there as well. So again, that's the Scani Summer Text to Win contest coming up. Parker, when Aaron Rodgers had his welcome or initial press conference with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he talked about, being back in football is good for my soul. Did you catch the other little nugget that he dropped out there?
The married thing?
The thing where he got married a couple of months ago.
Yeah. That was the most Aaron Rodgers thing I think I've ever heard.
By the way, I got married. I don't even know who. Because honestly, I haven't cared enough to look at the coverage.
No.
But, he's... and I say all this, I mean, I wish him well, but I also feel like we've simply set the stage for, the next big celebrity breakup out there. Today's history lesson is next, as we always do, with Melissa Kay, mornings up north and live on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.